I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is supported by HRN business member Chemists in the Kitchen by LabX. Chemists in the Kitchen is a YouTube video series by LabX, spotlighting the power of chemistry and how science and food can bring people together. In each episode, real scientists walk you through topics like making your own pickles, the chemistry behind ceviche, and much, much more. It's a love letter to science, cooking, and individuality, with some great tips on how you can apply real scientific principles to your own kitchen. Plus, it's just a lot of fun. Subscribe on YouTube to watch the entire series for free. Chemists in the Kitchen by LabX is a program of the National Academy of Sciences and supports HRN's creative educational reporting and storytelling that drive conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place.
I'm Lou Bank.
I am Cha Pariwan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the award-winning, critically acclaimed podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico.
And today we're going to really go deep into the agave. We don't know if this is going to work.
Or we're not going to go so deep. It really depends on the agave, Chava.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah, okay. Okay, I get that.
Yeah, you see what I did there?
Finally, a joke. Okay.
Yeah, finally a joke. It's always dad jokes. So so we got a question from our friend Rosemary Smith at Black Snake Distillery in Australia. Mm-hmm. Took a very long time for the question to reach us because it had to come from so far.
Yeah, sure, because we live without the internet, Lou. Whatever. So what was the question?
Okay, so the question is, now let me get the actual, does the unique taste of each agave spirit mainly come from its sugar source or the crushed fibers and juice?
Okay, so first of all, full disclaimer, there's an article that I've been terrified of revisiting because it really, I just couldn't grasp much of what I read there, but it was sort of a speculation of how different sugar chains and different agaves were actually distinct enough to react differently in the process of making spirits. I don't even remember the name. I got too intimidated and I passed by it.
But this is something that's published on the, on the internet that we could throw in on the episode.
Maybe,
page.
Yeah, but I don't want to even. It's
okay. So I'm glad you brought up something you don't want to bring up.
Great. So that is the first thing, and then there's an anecdotal thing that we all can agree with, even if you, Señor Lu, say that flavor is too subjective to be talked about.
Well, it's too subjective to be argued about.
Whatever. that we all have experienced that different agaves have different flavors. That is an absolutely true statement.
Yeah, though it's funny. Like, I think I'm coming at this from a different angle than you thought I would be coming at it from. I know. Just to mess with
you. Go for it.
Okay, so I would agree with that, but I suspect that when you're saying it, maybe I'm wrong, but I suspect when you are saying that, you're saying different varietals of agave have
Species is some varietals. Thanks.
Well, once you say varietals, you're implying species.
No,
that's why
no,
I specifically didn't say species. Talking, that's why I specifically didn't say species, because then you go, well, what about bequiche and madrequiche and quiche?
Species and varietals of species.
Sure. Okay. So I would go so far as to say, I would agree with what you said, but go further and say, well, yeah, but I don't think that a rotoconta that I get in one community is going to taste the same as a rotoconta in another community. Now, again, like her question was about the spirits, but I think we need to, because that's such a broad statement, and we've done so many episodes about the 400 decisions that mescaleros make that affect the flavors. But if we just focus on that one thing, the agave, right? I would say that you've got so many outside factors beyond just the genetic material of the plant that can affect the flavor.
Have you ever been in a tapada where they were doing an ensemble? So you can basically do a full tasting of different cooked agaves.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Lalo has walked me through that many times.
Right?
God bless you, Lalo.
Yeah. And it's freaking amazing, right? Because the flavors are different.
Oh, without question.
And I think the very easy, like the easier way to catch that those differences, it's at least for me, it's usually just how sugarish are ones versus the others. I think that's the one thing that gets really clear.
Oh, wow. I'd actually disagree. For me, it's not just like one sweeter than the others. There are distinct flavor notes.
Oh, no, absolutely. But I'm saying that, at least for me, the first thing that catch my palate was that they were clearly different in the sweet spectrum. And then there's a lot of other flavors attached to each other.
Sure. Okay.
All right. So, but then you being not necessarily the most social human that I know, you catch a lot of different flavors in each one of the different agaves. That surprises me.
Like very distinct.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. That's good. So actually, even, I mean, taking that even to another part of, I mean, this is part of the 400 decisions, but I also think it's a big part of the agave itself. It's the penca that it's left on the agave heart if you're going to process it. Because the penca, it sort of has the flavor of the agave, but not quite, right?
Yeah, and I wouldn't claim to fully understand why and why not, but you know, clearly there's a reason that so many mescaleros will completely shave off the pencas, the leaves of the agave, before they cook, and some leave them on. And then, you know, then you've got a handful who will make spirits just from the pencas. And it suggests that there's something different going on in terms of the biomass within the leaf than there is in the heart.
So just because we don't want to be the only voices speculating about this, we do have a quote that we're going to run. Thanks.
The espadín's leaves are a bit sweeter. That is why you leave a bit more of them. They can be as high as 5 or 7 centimeters. In Tobalá, you leave around 2 centimeters. Because it is still a bit sweet. But the pestate leaves are way more acid, so you cut them all. You can only use the heart of the agave.
So that was Diego Martinez Juarez from Santa Maria Albarradas, who is the maestro mezcalero for Dos Pasiones Mezcal, which is now available via our friend Jason Rivera in California. Is that correct?
It's certainly in California, and he's talking about Chicago. It'll be, you know, it'll be making its way across the country soon enough.
Okay, cool. So that little commercial apart, thanks for the quote. No, this is fascinating to me because you know what makes me think too about you've eaten watermelon in your life.
Sure, of course.
Probably not the best watermelon because you live in Chicago, but I'm sure you have had access to at least mediocre watermelons.
Sure, Trevor.
So in my family, we used to fight for the heart of the watermelon.
Like the center of it?
The center of it. And then the more it was getting to the outside, it gets less sweet and less beautiful. All the way when you're on the almost on the outside, that it gets white and it lacks flavor, just doesn't taste that great.
You know, you and I can fight over whether or not watermelon rind is delicious, and you being somebody who's not spent a lot of time in the South with pickled watermelon rind are going to have the wrong answer, but that's not the point here.
Okay, well, at least in its natural shape and form.
Sure.
I'm starting to think if that is something that we just have never quite considered in the agave context. Like, You know, and in a way, what can balance the flavors attached to it? Maybe if we were only using the very, very center of the agave, we'll end up with just the over-the-top sweetest mezcales in the planet.
Hmm.
You know, everything will even taste almost additive intensive. And then if we... So I think there's even a balancing of the possible flavors available in the whole process by deciding how much do you shave. Like, and maybe you don't want to have the sweetest stuff. You want to have a bigger range, if you wish.
Well, you know, and I think that is absolutely the case. And obviously, you know, somebody who learned from their parent, who learned from their parent, who learned from their parent, like there's oftentimes this sort of chain of knowledge that also becomes, I think, a chain of preferred flavors that results in, you know, how an agave is processed for a specific result. But, you know, that quote was talking about how much of the panca, how much of the leaf of the tobalá you take versus the espadín. And I think you have to step back from that and say it's not how much, you know, like everyone takes, but how much this particular mezcalero takes, which I think is sort of to your point, mm-hmm. right? I think if you dig deep enough, you're going to find some mezcaleros shave their potatorum completely clean and some do leave a little bit on. And then as I said, you've got like Aniceto Garcia, he's making a tepestate that's entirely from the panca, just the panca. That you end up with these very different flavors. Because again, taste is subjective, and what you might be shooting for at one palenque, one mezcalero shooting for is different than another one.
Yes, and you also have different sugar contents in each one of these agaves, so it's not a big surprise that espadín has a sweeter penca, and therefore you can probably shave it less. It also talks to me about why tepestate is so freaking expensive. Because it's not only that it has less sugar count in its heart, but a lot of the weight that you're winning in the espadín realm, for example, with leaving a little bit more penca, you are losing in the marmoratas or in the tepestate. So you understand what I'm saying, right?
Are you then saying that you're using less of the penca and the tepestate than you are in the espadín?
Yeah, correct.
Well, see, and here's
well again, in our quote.
Right. And again, this is why I go back to the idea like Aniceto Garcia, he's making his...
I'm talking specifically about the quote. Also something interesting that calls my attention, and I think this might be the whole point about Aniceto, is this guy is telling us, Diego is talking about acidity, right?
Uh-huh.
And as we know in wine, in coffee, in many other things, acidity, it tends to be a contentious matter. So some people love their acid espressos. I might be, you know, I'm one of those kids. I love my acid espresso, but I know people that hate that with a passion.
Right.
So maybe you're talking here about Diego being someone that his acidity threshold is not something he appreciates. Whereas Aniceto maybe is like, you know what? Acidity in this stuff, it's... And I've had some mezcales that I love that my stomach doesn't love as much.
Sure.
You know, that are really high on the acid. So this might be some of the decisions that are creating those thresholds of flavors that I think anecdotically we find a lot.
Right. And so again, it's subjectivity. It's what do you like and where did that come from and what were you taught as a kid and how did you learn to make your spirits? But circle back to what Rosemary was asking, in essence, I think, is, you know, like, okay, so she's making spirits in Australia using agave, right?
Mm.
And my guess is, and it's a shame that it takes 4 weeks for her text messages to reach us because she's so far away. But my guess is she's asking the question because she's trying to figure out how to play with the agave to get different flavors.
Yes, and do we know how to help her in... I think it's a lot of... We also have no experience with the land of Australia. So, I mean, a little bit to your point, I don't know if you saw this, but in Maguey Melate, we did some posts using Banjes educational material. So Banjes Mezcal educational material about the types of soils that are in existence in Ejutla, according to some samples they've taken. And then they are crazy enough, God bless them, to even do a mapping of the different soil types in the different areas where they're planting their agave. And they've been trying to figure out even how those soil types in one specific region, just changing elevation very slightly, can affect the flavors that you can extract from the agave.
Which makes total sense when you think about that in terms of what you just said in the previous episode that we recorded, but maybe not the one that you're listening to because we don't run them in the same order that we record them, but where you were talking about how the barley is depleting the soil around the pulquero plants, right? Around the agave that's being used to make pulque. And once you're depleting the soil of nutrients, the nutrients have got to have some kind of effect on that agave.
Yes. And I mean, all I'm saying is I think it's completely obvious that it does. We just don't know how.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I might be very wrong about this, but I think I heard somewhere that the most expensive real estate in the planet, it's a vineyard. I'm pronouncing this.
It's a vineyard.
Vineyard. Yeah. I think in Burgundy, where they, it's, I think, 1 hectare, and it's valued at a crazy amount of money because they agreed that that is the piece of land makes the most fortunate grapes in the planet.
Huh. Okay, we're going to, since you just pulled this out of your pocket, I guess we're going to have to do some research.
Me and my mouse. No, but yeah. What I'm trying to say, this might be very wrong, but it's very well understood that there in the wine world, there's definitely a notion of this is a more expensive piece of land to grow your grapes than others.
Of course, yeah.
And that in Mezcal.
Right, nobody's
having that conversation at all. It's not even close to have that conversation. The only reason why area might be more malleable than another is because it grows faster, which is such a silly notion. So it's not, it makes a better product, it makes a faster product, or it's closer to where I'm going to use it.
Right.
So we are in as we say in Spanish, I don't know if you have that expression in English, in diapers and pañales. We are just starting to understand these things.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that's, is that a wrap?
No. I want to explore this more. I think this was more of an introductory episode that will prompt us to talk more specifically about the differences of specific agaves and of these specific landscapes, ecosystems, and soil types.
Well, and I would just like rosemary down in Australia, or I guess over in Australia, maybe it's even up depending on how you look at the globe. I would just like Rosemary to do a bunch of experiments at her own cost and then send us the sample so that tell us what did she do with that agave, where did it come from, how did she, right? To give us the answer to the question that she asked, because I think that's the only way you get the answer. And she's in, I would say, a very unique position in that she's not coming from the multiple generations of customs of doing things in one way, which gives her, I think, at least more freedom intellectually to play around than maybe
that is
we
the
can
worst
find.
Thing you've done in the history of this podcast.
It's the worst what?
The worst comment you've ever done in this podcast, Lou. More freedom everybody has, like whatever's.
Intellectual freedom.
No. Fully disagree. Hard disagree.
What do you mean?
Well, I think actually coming from a tradition gives you a tremendous freedom because it gives you more information, more understanding, more. It just makes her stand in a different place. I want to say it gives her more freedom. Just she's standing in a different place, and that's amazing.
Oh, boy, wow, this just took a left turn. I disagree in terms of when I think about the communities that we go to, like Amando's a great example, right? We go visit Amando in East Cotlan, and we see on the road to Amando's place that it's covered with sotol, and we ask him, you know, are you making spirits with this? And he said, oh, no, you can't. I think that sometimes you learn things. If you come from that background, you learn things that are hard to unlearn or to think beyond.
At the same time, he's running Los Amantes right now and doing crazy stuff that is not necessarily embedded in his community's tradition, but that he can do just because he understands his discipline with great detail.
Yeah, no, I get that. Sure.
I mean, I understand the myth of someone that comes from tradition having a not as broad understanding of stuff. I just disagree with that. I understand the myth. I don't agree with it.
Well, and I wouldn't say it lacks a broad understanding. Just literally sees walls sometimes where there aren't walls.
Full disagree. We're not going to solve that. This is a wrap.
Okay. I'll catch you next episode.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Periban. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, there. I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat & 3.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.